I don't know. I see it this way, you know, like the mountain gorillas, 400 left in the world, 400. And we cannot put them in a zoo because they have no immunity. So it's in the zoo, what you see, it's a lowland gorilla. It's a different species. So if we don't do something about that, if we don't participate, like when we go and okay, people say, oh, $600 per person, that's a lot of money for 45 minutes. Yeah, yeah, for sure it is. But this $600, it's for each workers that they are looking after them 24 on 24 during 365 days of the year to protect them. And I think this, you don't need, it's priceless. Doesn't matter how much it's going to cost you to go to see them. It's priceless.
Spanning the globe to bring great photographers and their experiences directly to you. It's 8 p.m. in Japan, 1 p.m. in Spain, and it's 7 p.m. in tonight's guest's home in Margaret River, Australia. That means it's time for the Camera Cafe Show, brought to you by the photographers Macro Magic Man Tom Jacob and Mr. 24 Millimeter Man Dave Payne. Hello there, Macro Magic Man. Would you like to welcome our special guests and introduce her to our listeners?
I think it's the best intro I heard until now, Dave. You're improving a lot. Thanks for that. So let's get things rolling today with our special guest, so far away, for me at least, sitting there on her porch in the Western Australian outback, looking over 500 new trees she planted in her garden to observe wildlife. But then when she gets up from her porch, well, then I think, Dave, she's unstoppable and she roams all over the world to get the most amazing travel images, as we can see on her social media accounts. It's our pleasure today to have with us an amazing woman travel photographer, Dalida Innes, with multiple wins, awards, international photo competitions, like the National Geographic Travel Photographer of the Year. And be ready to hear some amazing travel stories later on. How are you there, Dalida, today?
Hello, Dave, and hello, Tom, first. I'm going very well, actually, and I'm pleased to do this with you today.
We are pleased. Thank you for coming on the show, Dalida. It's an honor for us.
Well, thanks to you guys.
I was wondering before, just as an opener, because to see we are talking to real human persons here that can make real human decisions. You do a lot of travels. And I know when I traveled, I made some pretty silly mistakes sometimes. Mm. I remember one very vividly in China. Had you ever had that moment where you were out and you say, oh boy, I have no clue how to get back to my hotel?
No, because all the time I did a trip, sometimes I was by myself, I was in trouble, but not what you will think it will have been, because I am a woman by myself and how do you say that, like men trying to do things, you know. And yeah, I got scared, but not otherwise. When I go like on trip on safari, you have always a guide, and so no, I haven't been in trouble for that.
No, I was referring to other languages, or I remember I was in China, and I mean, from the excitement, I just got in the hotel room, dumped the bag, took the camera, went out with no map, start walking, and got totally lost because nothing was in English and nobody spoke English, and it was really funny to get back to my hotel room. I mean, if you walk for 2 hours and then suddenly you realize, oh, this is going to be very tough. So no experience on that side?
No, the first time I went to Sydney by myself, which it was a big city when you come from a small village itself in France. No, because I was having a map on my hand, and from the hotel I knew where to go and what to do. But no, I didn't experience that. Not at all. Not once. Never got lost.
Very good. It will come.
And at the time, we didn't have iPhone and GPS. We didn't have that.
You know? Exactly. Dalida, tell me a bit about yourself and how you decided to walk into this world of being a travel and wildlife photographer.
Actually, it all started when I was quite very young. I had a really, really difficult childhood, right? I don't want to go into this, but most of the time I was sick and in the hospital when I grew up. And my mom was very passionate about wildlife, and she was always watching this kind of documentary, was National Geographic on TV. And so she introduced me to this, and this is from mom. And from that, when I started to grow, I remember I used to play with a camera that it was broken. Of course, I wasn't going to do any pictures, but I was, in my imagination, just thinking that I was taking pictures of animals. And then from there, when I start to work and I start to buy my first, I don't know if you do remember, you remember this JVC camera?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you could do movies and, mm-hmm. and things like this. They were quite big. And I bought one like this, and I said, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a documentary person, you know. But, of course, you know, your parents are not going to pay for school for you to do anything like this because they can't understand it. And so I tried to do things with the pets in the street, in the village, you know, when you have dogs and cats, because in France it's a lot in the street. So I used to try this, but I could see I wasn't good. That's it. It wasn't my things. And then I bought another one and another one and another one. But wildlife was always something I wanted to see. And I always said to myself, I want to go one day in Africa. And I had to make a choice at the time when I was going to travel to say to, you know, the choice was, do I go to Africa by myself or do I go to Australia? This is where my life changed completely. And I decided to go to Australia because I thought it was safer for me to go in Australia than to go in Africa by myself. And I met my husband. This is where I met my husband. And this is where actually we are. He's like me. He loves wildlife. He loves all these kind of things. And we started to do a lot of travel. And we went many times to Africa and India and, you know, the rest of it. So, yeah, it comes from this, but I was still having a small camera the first time I went to Africa. I was still having this kind of, it was still, I think, the same JVC, but it was a bit smaller at the time, or Sony, I can't remember. And I went there, and my husband bought me the D5000. I don't know if you do remember the Nikon D5000.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was still filming. And I was taking pictures, but I wasn't interested to take pictures. I wanted to take actions. I wanted to do exactly the same as what I was watching on TV. But then from there, I was like, okay, you're not good at it. My video, they were not good at all. But I took pictures. And from there, I start to get more interested in pictures. I say, okay, pictures, you don't move, you know? You freeze the moment, and then from there, yeah, I just say, okay, I go on photography, and it looks really good.
And you did very well, because look, all the kind of awards you got in the meantime, Dalida.
Yeah, but in the beginning, I wasn't good, of course, and I started to look up over wildlife photographers. I start to buy books and I started to read. And the only way to learn from the composition and how to photograph an animal was to read, because you need all this information to get the right picture. But another thing is I was in animal care in France. So this did help me as well to first to observe the behavior of the animal and then to try to take the picture.
Yes, very true. I think many people, I think when they start in nature photography, they miss this part a bit of learning the animal you're going to take pictures of to know how it behaves. It's very important.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. That's the most important, I think. This is what I think. I think, first of all, you look at the behavior, you observe, and then you think, okay, I can get closer or I cannot get closer. That will depend on the animal itself. But the best way to take the picture is to let the animals to come to you.
Mm-hmm. Dalida, I want to pick in a bit what you said in the mm-hmm. beginning. So you are a woman photographer in a jar or in a world that is mostly dominated by men. I think we all know this.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about the professional and personal challenges you have to face this, to pursue your craft, or maybe what advice would you give to aspiring female travel photographers? Because I know you wrote a blog about it.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. Yeah, yeah, good. So yeah. Maybe you can enlighten them a bit.
Yeah, it's difficult for a woman to be a wildlife photographer because depending which country you go. And some countries are more dangerous than others. And I would say probably most of this country where you want to see wildlife, I mean, you know, the big five and all these kind of animals. The best way to do it is to do a good research and to respect the country where you are going in, and not to attract anything, you know, other men. You're not going to dress like you're going to the beach. So there is no way you can do this in a country where women are dressed not this way. Other things to do is probably to go with a group, you know, a group of women.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
If you are like five friends wants to go to the same country, that will be the safe way to go to the country, or to go with your husband, which I do. Yeah, but even with my husband, some countries, particularly one country actually, I didn't feel safe. Not because of my husband, but because I was with my husband, but surrounded by 10 men. And mm-hmm. I didn't feel comfortable at all because anything could have happened. And I said on the blog, yeah, have a network on your phone, something where to communicate and to say where you're going. But when you're in the jungle, you don't know where you are. And mm-hmm. you don't know what can happen to you. It did happen to me in Indonesia. I was excited in the beginning, but after 6 days not seeing one life and be surrounded just by men, I didn't feel safe at all because I didn't know where I was. I didn't know. We were in the middle of the jungle. So, yeah, it is scary. Even if you have a friend coming with you, even a male, it is.
I understand because I don't realize these things. So I think, David, it's a kind of topic we can keep for an upcoming podcast maybe.
I was thinking the same thing. As people get out, as photographers get out, and yeah. now that COVID is slowly receding to the back of our existence, it's probably going to be a good idea for us to put together an episode on traveling safe and shooting safe. I think it could be really good. And listening to what Dalita's talking about, I just jotted down a couple of notes real quick. That's something mm-hmm. that almost everybody could use, male or female.
Yeah, so that's right.
I think that's a good idea, Tom. Let's add that to our list.
Mm, let's work on that, yeah. Dalida, if you can pick two or three things that you say they are really important requirements for someone to be successful as a travel photographer, what you would pick?
For me, the first things will be probably to respect the animal you have in front of you. A lot of people do not, unfortunately, and accidents happen, as we saw in South Africa, when people try to go really close to an elephant, but at the end of the day, they will kill the elephant, not the humans. So to respect that boundary, you know, that there is a line and you cannot go any further. If the animal choose to come to you, and which did happen to me, I was far away from it, but the animal came very close. And nothing happened to me. You know, it was just by the way, it was a great experience. It happened twice. But it was a great experience for me. So that's the first things to do, is to observe and to let the animal to choose if he's curious or not. If he's not, well, but don't try because you want to have the super shot. Don't try something you shouldn't. Probably that will be my first advice if you want to become a wildlife photographer.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And I think also it's what we did some interviews before now. They still have to come out on the podcast. And yeah. Most of the nature photographers we do interviews with, they also say the same things over and over again. So
yeah, because we saw it so many times. When you go in Africa on safari, you see all these wildlife photographers, and they know the spot where to go because we know where to go. But then when you see some of them nearly fighting just to get the right shot, that's ridiculous. And you stress the animal more than anything else. This is what you're doing. So for me, these people know nothing about animals, and they are there and they get the award because they took the right shot, but they did it in the wrong way. That's the way I see it personally.
Yeah,
that's a great point. Take it, they got a great shot, but they did it the wrong way.
Yeah, I saw wildlife photographers asking guides to run after a giraffe to get out of the car, and asking him to make the giraffe running for him to take the shot. I mean, it's shocking. When you think about it, a giraffe can still kill you. I don't know if you know, but a giraffe can be very powerful. I couldn't believe my own eyes. I couldn't believe it. So that things, you know, which doesn't make sense to me.
Is there another important requirement that comes to your mind, Dalida?
Well, to keep your distance, that's another one, I would say. To study the animal before to go. So if you decide to go to see, let's say the polar bear. So you just don't go. If you go just for a trip to, you know, some people, they just go, they see it, take a shot, and that's it. You know, they are happy, they saw it. But now, if you go for a purpose, you need to study the animal first. Try to find any book you can, or today there is internet anyway, and try to find the most you can about the behavior before to jump and to say, oh yes, I can get close and take a shot. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying, because a lot of people do not do any research. A lot of people, they just go and they say, oh yeah, I'm going to take the shot. But you have to, like mountain gorillas, that's the same things. People, when you go mountain gorillas, you have not too much choice than to do it with a group. This is how it works. And if you want to do it in private, you need to pay for the full group. So if this is 10 people, you are going to give $600 per person just for yourself. You have to replace that money for the rangers because they look after them. So you go in a group and you can see people following the gorillas, you know, instead of sitting and saying to yourself, okay, between two branches, I can grab a nice portrait or something like this, you know. But no, they don't do this. They just follow, like, you know, like hands together and trying to follow the gorillas. So you just put them more in stress than anything else, even if they are habituated to humans, because humans are around them all the time to protect them. But still, this is still a 200 kilos, you know, gorilla in the front of you. And you have to be very careful not to stress them, or because animals, they don't understand if you have some movement with your gesture, with your hand, they don't know what you're going to do. They don't have this, you know, like thinking, oh yeah, they are tourists, that's okay, I can sit here and hit my little branch. No, it doesn't work this way. And that's why I always say to people, just study the animal first and then go and take the shots you want without hurting them.
So it's interesting, because listening to you talk and with our conversations before mm-hmm. we've shared, it seems like it's almost like the three rights. You've got to have the right research.
Yeah.
You've got to have the right equipment.
Yeah. But
then to be successful, you've got to have the right mindset.
Exactly. I believe this. Wow. I really do believe this. Like what you see right now on my Twitter or Facebook at the moment, the bird that I'm photographing, I am inside the house. I'm not outside. And they are on the other side of the garden. Okay, I'm lucky to have the right lens to photograph them. But if I start to go too close, they would just go to hide inside the bush, and I cannot get the right shot. So I just wait for them. As soon they come, they don't come often, but when they come, this is where I'm going to grab the camera and shoot the most I can, depending on the behavior. So this is, but I am inside the house. I'm not just close, super close, and trying to get few shots. And I study them as well. When I say this is the male and female, this is the red winged, or this is the splendid fairy wren. It's because I did study them as soon as I arrive where I live right now, because we don't have them in Sydney. They are just in this area. So as soon as I arrived, I studied them, went on internet and check which one is a male, which one is a female, which was very difficult in the beginning because you don't know, you know. But now I know, of course. I just want to say to people, I'm not that close at all. I'm not. I respect, you know, this distance. And this is the little tree or whatever it is. And I just wait hours and hours for them to come.
So, Dalila, now you touched the topic of gear, and I know many mm. people enjoy the topic of gear and what you use. What's your favorite? Because I think you shoot Nikon, no?
Yes.
Yes.
Definitely.
So if you go out, let's definitely, Dave, listen. If you, let's say, you go to Nepal, you go to make some pictures of an animal there, what is in your camera bag?
Depends on the animal that I will shoot. If it is a very shy animal, like the snow leopard in the Himalayas in India, North India, that was 600 and 400, and I still had to have a teleconverter's 1.4, you know, to reach. Sometimes it wasn't even necessary. 400 mil was plenty enough, depending where the snow leopards were. But if, let's say, for a mountain gorilla, because you're close enough, 70-200 was plenty enough, or even a 50 mil was plenty enough for me, because you're very close. So you carry always two cameras. You're not going to carry one camera and change your lenses. You don't have time for this. Because with the mountain gorillas, you have 45 minutes. After 45 minutes, the rangers, they ask you to leave. So that's... Right now, the birds you see on Twitter, this is a 600 mil from inside my house, just through, unlucky because I've got windows all around the house, so I can go to see from the backyard to the front yard. And depending where they are, I just use my camera straight away. But yeah.
And you're using DSLR, or you went to mirrorless already, Dalila?
No, I didn't go to the mirrorless yet because I invest so much money in cameras, the DSLR, when they came out, that I'm not going to do it now. So no, I'm using a DSLR D5, and the D500 Nikon is for underwater only, which I'm not crazy onto it, but that's okay. That's the right camera to use. And then I have
I mentioned
D810.
Did you say underwater?
Yeah, because for the whales, when I do the whales, I use the D500 with a wide lens and the underwater cover that I have with. So in the beginning, I thought to use the D5 when I started, or the D4S was, sorry. I'm confusing. But then I changed my mind and I thought, okay, the D500 came out. And I thought, well, the D500 is okay. You can still do a lot of shots. The only negative point is the ISO in it. I don't like so much noise on my picture. That's one thing I hate. It's the noise. I really hate it because you really disturb the picture. In my eyes, I'm saying this for myself. So the D500, yeah, it's only for underwater, or really if I go just around here and I will put the 70-200 on it because this is a DX camera. So I've got the reach for, you know, a few small birds around Margaret River. That's perfect. And it's not big. So that's a perfect camera for me.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back a little moment to the whales because it's very interesting. I'm a scuba diver for many years.
Oh,
I never did it because I never was in the right place where they are. So how does it work? I know I have to come.
The whales, so the humpback whales, so we are talking about the humpback, yeah? Not the blue whale. I haven't done the blue whale. That's my dream. The blue whale, but it's more difficult apparently to swim with them. But the humpback whale, it's a very if you don't try to chase them, they are very curious animal, and they will come to see you very close. And it's quite very big, like 37 ton in front of you. it's impressive, very impressive. I've done it many times. I've done it like 4 years. And I used to go like 2 weeks and doing swim morning and afternoon. And I think the last year, just before COVID, I went there and it was more people going to the spot where I was going. And I didn't like it because in the beginning we were the only two, and then it just became more and more tourist. And I could see the whales were not staying because what people, this is again about behavior. Like people, they don't know, they just jump in the water. You cannot jump. You have to go very nice and slowly if you want to be with the whales. So people jump and try to swim very fast and trying to reach the whale, but the whale just go away. But the last day, I remember because I hurt myself, I had a fracture in my rib and I couldn't swim. And I thought, well, no one is going to stop me on my last day of swim, but I will go just me, the guide, my husband, and another guide. I said, I want no one on the boat, no one else. When we jumped, we had that female that she came very, very close, and I couldn't get away. She was coming up, but the male was following her. She did not have a calf at the time, and she's so close, like I was 12 mil lens, and she was, I couldn't fit her in my lens so much. She was so close to me, and I took a lot of shots, and she stayed around us for probably 45 minutes. I couldn't believe that, like 45 minutes. And then more males came, and we understood that the heat run was about to start. And she started to, like they say, she started to run, to swim away. And you had seven males coming behind her. That was just fantastic to see it. But the, here you cannot swim anymore. I mean, like, you cannot follow that. They go so fast. You can't follow them.
I'm coming to visit you. I have to see this. See that.
I have to see oh, you this. Have, you know, you have to do it because it's another world. It's when your head is under the water. I mean, you know this already, but in contact with whales, and it's high to high. And I think that's, you know, you, I don't know, it's just like a big high. And that high is moving from right to left. And she's watching you. And it's like she's smiling at you. It's just amazing. You have to do it. I can't explain to people because, you know, they say, oh, it's big, it's dangerous. No, it's not.
No, for dangerous later, we go to see the great white sharks, maybe.
Yeah, okay. You come just, with me then.
Just before you get committed to an asylum for trying that. Listening to just this brief recap of, I mean, you shot from fairy wrens to eyeball with whales.
Mm-hmm.
A snow leopard to a mountain gorilla. I mean,
yeah.
All of these things have a big question mark in my mind. Yeah. You know, we just talked with Will Wilson a short time ago and with Jamie Smart. And listening to you talk about these animals, the thought about nature conservation comes to mind for me. It's how many more photographers are going to lose that chance if they don't get involved seriously with nature conservation? How important do you see that being for photographers? And is there some group or some effort that you're personally active in for conservation?
Yeah, I give a lot of pictures to conservation in Tanzania when I did Ruawa National Park. This woman contacted me. She's a British and she lives there. I don't know if she's still living there, but she wanted... she saw my pictures and she said, oh, I will be interested if we can have them. And I said, oh, yeah, of course. You know, I have no problem to give my pictures for what they need for the research or anything like this. It's only pictures, you know. It's, you know, if they need them, yeah, fine. And then there is this other person, she fights for the orangutan as well. And she asked me a few of his pictures as well, and I gave it to her. And if we, unfortunately, and I'm going to be honest here, unfortunately, famous wildlife photographers rarely will give or participate to anything. Some do. I'm not saying all of them, but most of them. They are always in your research to be on the top of the pyramid. And it really annoys me because it annoys me in the way that if we don't do something today, tomorrow you can take your camera and you go to photograph, let's say a polar bear. Yeah, if you find one, you are lucky. I don't know, I see it this way, you know, like the mountain gorillas. 400 left in the world, 400. And we cannot put them in a zoo because they have no immunity. So it's in the zoo, what you see, it's a lowland gorilla. It's a different species. So if we don't do something about that, if we don't participate, like when we go and okay, people say, oh, $600 per person, that's a lot of money for 45 minutes. Yeah, yeah, for sure it is. But this $600 US, it's for each workers that they are looking after them 24/24 during 365 days of the year to protect them. And I think this, you don't need, it's priceless. Doesn't matter how much it's going to cost you to go to see them. It's priceless.
That's and that 45 minutes can change your life.
Yeah, completely. I did it many times. And I always did enjoy it. You know, it's It's an incredible experience. In the beginning, I didn't want to go because I remember my husband say, "Oh, what do you think if we do the Mountain Gorilla?" And I say, "Oh, dying, it's only monkeys, you know, in the mountains. What for? I want to see lions." And so he said, "Let's do it." All right, okay, let's do it. And when I realized what it was, that was, you know, completely different. I said, "Yeah."
that it became a memorable experience for you and one that pushed you forward. Which,
yeah.
Let me ask you a different question, Dalita. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You've been out on a number of, I guess you'd call them group shoots, or where you go out with a group of people. Could you share with our listeners maybe two of the most memorable personal moments you witnessed when you were out with groups shooting wildlife?
Yeah, I wouldn't say the word shocked, but made me to realize life is really short, was this woman. We were in a snow leopard, and she was from Japan. And she was 97 years old, and we are at 5,600 meters. And she wanted absolutely to see the snow leopard. That really, you know, warmed my heart so much. I was, you know, I was nearly having tears, like, you know, because she couldn't afford it to go before, but she could afford it now. And here she was with a walker, and she did the trip from Japan just to see the snow leopard. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes you say, "Oh, yeah, but you know, it's only a lion. I can go to the zoo to see it." But the lion in the zoo and the lion in the wild, it's got nothing to do. It's nothing. It's not the same at all. But can you imagine yourself at 97 years old and thinking, "Oh yeah, I go to see it. I want to see the mountain gorillas," you know, and to do all the trip. I mean, it's amazing, you know.
So she's almost 100 years old.
Yeah.
She's using a walker to get around.
Yes. And
did she see a snow leopard?
Yes, she did. And she's been very lucky that morning. The snow leopard made a kill down the river. And he killed a very huge hyrax. And she came a little bit later than what we started. We started before 8. She arrived there, I think it was 9:30, and we told her the snow leopard is down there. So you still needed like a binocular to see it. But she was just happy to see it. She was just happy. Because she came before and she never saw it. Like a few days before, she didn't get that chance to see it because we had to cross the day before. We had to hike the mountains through the snow, so she wasn't going to do this. And the day before, it was a very deep snow to go to the edge of the valley to go to see the snow leopard on the other side, the mother with the cubs. So she couldn't do this. But this time, that snow leopard was on our side of the village, and it was along the road. So you had just to walk probably 4 steps, and you take your binoculars and you could see it, or you could take a bigger lens and take pictures. I was so happy for her. I was so happy for her.
Dalida, the snow leopard, it's the one we saw on the news that killed himself chasing an ibex?
Yeah, that's the one you see on my website, the video of it, or mm-hmm. some shots as well that I've got on the portfolio there. That snow leopard died the week after I left. And I received pictures when, you know, they used a ritual, they burn it. He was a very famous snow leopard from the village. Apparently, people, they knew him. He was 10 years old. And you can see on the video the way he's walking, because that video was made the day after the kill. So when he did make the kill, he was along the valley, and he went all the way down with the ibex, and they rolled and they fell in the river. And then the snow leopard tried to grab him and kill it. And he did kill it. So, but then he stayed there. We knew he was going to stay there. So, but it was too far away to get the right shot. So I said to myself, okay, I'm going to set up the camera from the top. I have no choice. And I'm going just to do a movie with it. You know, you couldn't take a nice shot. There was no way. Not that day, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
But you can see on the video, you can see the tail is not moving. And my guide from there sent me the picture. He said, we found him dead. And he said, the injuries come from the hunt, the kill he made last week when you were here. That was wow. Sad. Yeah, that was sad.
Delita, there's one last question that I'd like to use to end our conversation today with. For those people who are already into travel and wildlife photography,
yeah.
From your experience, and as we've heard, you've got a lot, what is the one thing you'd recommend to them they should start doing, one thing they should stop doing, and why?
Yeah, to start doing, I would say do your own research, go with the right guide, and respect the people where you are. That's not your country. Never forget that. Be respectful to everyone around you, and include the animal that is in front of you. So they can start by doing this in the first place. Did I say research about the behavior of the animal as well?
Yeah.
And the stop doing, that's the big one. The stop doing is to stop to be selfish. I think that's the biggest one for me. Stop to be selfish and thinking just about yourself because you just want to have that shot. There are other people, there are other photographers around you, and they want to take a shot. And doesn't matter if the person is next to you, the shot will still not be the same. So you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if someone is next to me and there is a lion in front of me, I'm going to take it a certain way. You are going to shoot it in a certain way. So you don't need to push people, and you don't need to be at the front of this person to try to take the picture. And this, you have to stop to do this and to stop to be selfish.
Stop being selfish. Okay, I got that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's photography is such a magical experience. That it's like I understand the drive to get a truly memorable image.
Yeah.
But you got to remember the life around you, the wildlife around you, and the other photographers, the people around you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You will always find
give way.
All those people.
Give way a little bit.
I agree.
Excellent. Well, Delita, this has been wonderful. Is there, with everything that we've covered, is there anything else you'd just like to add in closing?
Yeah, I just want to say that for me, wildlife photography is not just about to take your camera and shoot what you see. It's also an art to create a beautiful picture from the subject itself. That's the way I see it. I can take thousands of pictures, but through my viewfinder, I will see only one that will get right to my eyes, and that's the one I will choose. So, the lights, everything is so important in the picture. When I just want to make aware of the people that, use the light, the shadows, everything, the lines, make sure you get it right and enjoy photography. This is, it's just a beautiful thing for me personally.
Well said.
Very well said.
Thanks.
Dalida, thank you, because I think we can talk 2 hours more here on the podcast.
Definitely.
I think Dave and I will call you back one day when we do about an episode about conservation. We will give you a call.
Yeah, definitely.
And thank you for being our guest.
Thank you for having me. I really did enjoy that. I would have loved to say much more, but yeah, the time frame, I understand that. But thanks to Dave, thanks to you. I will be happy to do it again.
Wow, that's okay. Wonderful. Dalida, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure, and we're going to look forward to hearing you again.
Thank you.
Wow, Dave, don't tell me now you have the urge to get a backpack, hang two cameras around your neck, and go explore the world, no?
No, yeah. I was thinking actually about how I can get my walker to 5,000 meters up the Himalayas to get a shot like that.
I was thinking underwater.
Oh, underwater would be wonderful.
You will
I
float.
I mean, Dalida has just... It really is amazing, from small fairy wrens to giraffes running next to you to swimming with whales. Wildlife photography is just, it's amazing. And listening to her, you can tell the passion that she feels for what she's doing and what she's gets to see.
You can hear the passion in her voice when she starts remembering stories or when she remembers animals, special occasions. I really love that. I really love that. And also, Dave, I really enjoy inviting amazing women photographers now like her, because, you know, the world is changing slowly in photography, but it still has a way to go. And I hope also with a podcast like this and a future podcast we can do about women photographers, we can slowly make a change of how all these big photo companies are hiring their photographers, maybe.
You know, Tom, that's a really strong point. We're already talking about a conservation roundtable or forum episode. It might be really equally interesting and I think helpful if we did a women in photography roundtable where we invite, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 of the folks we've met and talked with and really get their views on it. I think it would be helpful for women who are considering getting into photography. It would also be helpful for men who are photographers out there to hear a side that maybe they've not thought about before.
Yeah.
Sounds like we've got 2 really good roundtable possibilities.
Yes, which sounds like we have some work to do, but we will make it happen.
Absolutely. Well, listeners, we hope that you've enjoyed this episode as much as Tom and I did. We'd like to leave you with a quote from the photographer Steve McCurry, who said, "Travel and photography have always been intertwined. I think we have such a brief amount of time in this world that I can't think of a better use of it than to travel, to photograph the world, to experience life in different places." Thank you so much for listening. Now pick up your camera, get out there, and create some memories.